How do I sound now? I sound okay?
Would you ask Pop that question?
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
It's a scary, scary times, man.
Oh, yeah. That's a grip ago, man.
Ready to rock and roll, everybody?
We're back with Hoops Adjacent, back in towns after being on remote in Vegas last week. David Aldrich in D.C. Marcus is back in the Bay. What is up, sir?
You know, it is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is not quite hot. It's warm enough. Like, man, I have forgotten what perfect Bay Area weather is like. Coming off Vegas, so it was so hot. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And then we got here and it was crazy hot and then it was cold. But we've hit our summer stride. Like, it is 68, not a cloud in the sky. You can wear whatever you want. Like, this is why we here, yo. This is why rent is high as hell and can't nobody afford to live here. Because
that's
this
why
is perfect weather.
Everybody lives 75 miles from downtown.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, this is why people live in valleys and on mountains out here, because it's so perfect.
My boy used to work for the Pac-10 Network. He told me he had to, his spot was 80 miles from where he worked. I'm like, damn,
listen,
that's every day.
That was me. I used to drive an hour to work when I covered the Warriors. I had to live an hour away because I couldn't afford to live here. So my first 5 years on the beat, I was living an hour away.
You were in the car.
You know what I'm saying?
Sleeping in the car.
You know what I'm saying? I literally learned how to drive with my knees. Because I need it, you know, I'm driving home. You get out the game 12:30, and I got an hour drive. So right, I'm like, right, let's see how far I can get without touching the steering wheel. I was playing games like that with myself. That's how long I was driving. Now I know how to drive with my knees, though, so it's all good.
You learned a skill.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man, got a great guest this week. Our man, Jovan Buha, who covers the Lakers for us. Host of the Stargazing podcast. Remind me who you had on last year. Y'all got season two. You've been renewed. Who'd you have last year?
Yeah, we had a bunch of people. We had Ronnie 2K, Vince the Barber, Daryl Ann from Clutch Sports. It was a fun first season. I'm looking forward to season two.
I know who you got to get, man. You got to get Brownie Blends.
Okay.
That's my guy from the town. Yeah, him and Vince the Barber type, but yeah. You got to get Brownie on. He got some great stories.
So what did you want to get out of that pod, and what are you still looking forward to doing next year?
Well, I think especially being out in LA, which is probably the epicenter of the NBA and NBA culture, I've just come in contact with so many different people that have almost become pseudo celebrities in their own right, and they all have these interesting stories and. They're all kind of in the NBA ecosystem, hanging out with players, working with them. And I just felt like I wanted to create a platform where I could give them a voice and let them share their journey. And I think, to me, the most interesting interview, which I know Jade loved, was Rich Fresh, who went from being homeless to a millionaire, creator of the Henry mask, which... Mm-hmm. A lot of players in the NBA, Rock, LeBron, Russ, so on and so forth. But he was homeless, and he had drug problems and money problems, and he was like, a year from now, I want to be a millionaire, and I don't know how I'm going to figure it out, but I'm going to do it. And he did it. And he's a celebrity designer, designed for Justin Bieber and The Weeknd, and A-list celebrities, but it just so happened that he created this mask during the pandemic and it went viral. And, LeBron started wearing it and he was kind of the first big athlete to co-sign it. But from there, it just kind of took off where now it's, according to him, the kind of the most successful mask brand currently. And if you just see it, around, there's so many athletes and celebrities wearing them. So just stories like that, I found.
Man, forget the mask. Really, I want one of them $12,000 sweatsuits.
Sweatsuits.
Tracksuits, the Rich Fresh tracksuits. I'm like, yo. Right?
He's like, I'm designing these intricate tracksuits, and I'm like best known for making this mask during the pandemic.
Right.
I remember, I think Steph wore one, and I looked it up, and it was like prices starting at $12,000. I was like, started?
Like, That's crazy. That's so long ago.
That's out my league, man. I ain't got that.
I remember when Scottie Pippen had the tracksuits that everybody was wearing for like 5 minutes, and they were like $500, and we thought, that's crazy. How can anybody spend $500 for a tracksuit? You know what I mean? So I just went, like, I'm at a double disadvantage. First, I'm old, and second, I live on the East Coast. So this whole world is, everything you say to me, anybody that you mention, with, other than Ronnie 2K, who everybody knows, but, you know, it's so fascinating to me that there's this whole ecosystem that I know nothing about that's part of the NBA, that's a big part of the NBA. And I know part of it is generational, but what have you found about the types of people that find their niche? What's the common denominator with them that find their niche in the new NBA, in the younger NBA?
I think the biggest thing is just grinding. Like Daryl Ann, who's with Clutch Sports, he really wanted to cover the NBA, cover the Lakers, grew up a big Lakers fan, and he was doing wedding photography to pay his bills. And he'd be like going to weddings for an entire weekend and then driving from Orange County to Staples Center to cover games and covering every practice he could. And he ended up going viral because LeBron took a practice shot that he posted and put it on his Instagram and tagged him. And that was his lucky break. He, gained 20 plus thousand followers just off of that tag. And then that actually led to him ultimately working with Clutch Sports because Rich Paul saw that and, ended up reaching out to him. So I think really everyone kind of has that common grind of, there's really no path to, I think even all three of us have different paths to being on this podcast right now. And there's no real blueprint in this industry, be it media or being a photographer, a barber, a stylist. But everyone, I think that the one common thing is everyone loves basketball and they made this a priority of like, I'm going to figure out how to do it. And of course, lucky breaks along the way, people having certain connections certainly has helped. But I think the one common denominator was everybody basically started from zero and figured out a way to work their way into the industry and learning from other people. It was a big part of it too. But it's to me, like I like the Tim Ferriss show and stuff like that, where you find people's journeys and kind of where they got to where they are now. And that to me was kind of the inspiration behind the podcast of, let's get people's journeys on record and, shine some light on them.
I feel like we have a few generations of sports media covered here in this podcast. I would like for you as, I don't want to call you a young beat writer because I don't think you're as young as you look. Like, you've been doing this, a significant amount of time, right? Like, obviously not as much as David Aldridge, but you're not like second year. But the way the landscape has changed and the information flow has changed and it's gotten so competitive with how to get information. I remember using the type of guys you're talking about for stargazing to get info and to develop those sources, because you kind of got to start there as a young writer. You're not going straight to the top. You're not getting the GM. You're not getting the owner. You kind of got to work your way up. How is that for you? And where are you on this food chain? Do you find that, that's still the easy place to get information without battling at the top with, because now if we are being frank about it, we're being honest about it, it's not necessarily about how good you are, right? It's about who you work for, who you connected to. All this stuff is largely preordained. Do you find this is a good way to find information and find stories while, just being a writer trying to make it and not in that, that kind of closed off area for purposes that have nothing to do with ability?
Yeah, definitely. I think, especially when I started with the Clippers, that was kind of how I worked my way up through the organization in terms of just sourcing and getting to know people. Was you start with the equipment people and the lower level scouts and the video guys and the assistant trainers and stuff like that. So I think you definitely have to work your way up in terms of just relationship building and sourcing with, I think, the smaller people first. So, you know, smaller within the organizational hierarchy. But I think with the Lakers, it's, they don't have as big of a staff as the Clippers. So already I think you're kind of starting up a little bit higher there. But yeah, I mean, I think being a newer beat writer, at least on this beat, and starting it in the pandemic, I mean, there was definitely challenges of like, I didn't meet Rob Pelinka my first season on the beat. I didn't even meet Frank Vogel my first season on the beat. So, there was definitely some limitations there, but yeah, I mean, I think these types of people can certainly be valuable and helpful, because it is tough. Like that's been, I think that is the biggest challenge in today's age of reporting is just, you know, finding reliable information, but also, you know, getting access to the people that you know have the reliable information. And it is a very, you know, it's very tiered of, you know, are you a national reporter or you know, are you at this outlet, are you at that outlet? So it's certainly a challenge, but I think you start with the smaller people, and I think hopefully you start to break some news and report stuff that, you know, people find valuable, and that kind of starts to make a name for yourself that way.
That's why I was saying, like, it's not, I don't want to make it seem like, hey man, in 10 years you'll be there. Like, you know, it's not really about your ability per se. Yeah. But what one thing I've noticed about you is that even when you start small, I don't really like that term because you do find that there's some great stories in there, right? Like, it's almost like you use them as a way to work your way in, but they maintain value to you as a writer, right? It's not like, all right, now I'm talking to the general manager, I no longer need to talk to these guys. But it seems like you found that, hey man, this is kind of a treasure trove here that we probably shouldn't abandon.
Yeah. And to be clear too, like, I think there's also, like, those are the people I think you build genuine relationships and friendships with, where I think at the front office higher levels, it is more transactional, and you can be friendly, but at the end of the day, it's reporter and you know, GM or whoever in the front office. But I think with those other people, like, you guys are kind of more on a similar level of, like, you know, some of them, they barely talk to the GM or mm-hmm. you know, the owner or the head coach. Like, you know, they're kind of in a similar boat of, like, you know, you might actually interact with those people more than they do. So I think on some level too, like, there's just a genuine kind of, you know, chance to form a bond with those people, that it's not just for the sourcing or for, you know, context, background information. It is just, you know, you're seeing them every day, and you know, you're traveling to the same spots, and you guys will go get dinner, grab a beer. And, you know, yes, there's always the reporting element of that, but there's also a relationship element that, you know, they kind of become your friends to some extent.
I want to talk about, you wrote a really good piece, I thought, the other day in The Athletic about the very, very unusual public kind of split between Russell Westbrook and his agent, Thad Fouché. And for people who don't know, Thad Fouché has been Russell's agent from minute one, since he came out of college at UCLA, all through Oklahoma City and all of his stops in between. And the one thing, Thad is as quiet and as uninterested in the public spotlight as any prominent agent I've known. He's worked with Aaron Tellin forever, and now, you know, has done great stuff on his own for years. And so it was shocking to see him send a statement basically divorcing himself from Russell Westbrook out in public.
Business, man.
That's crazy, yeah. Because it's just not, I mean, if he is the last person I would say is going to put that out there like that. So you wrote a really good nuanced story about it, Jovan. And I wanted to ask you about, like, why do you think he did that? Why do you think he wanted everybody to know, I'm not representing Russell Westbrook anymore, and here's why?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to, I mean, it was really shocking to me, and I spoke to people around the organization that were shocked by not necessarily them splitting, because I think there had been, it had maybe been building toward that. I mean, obviously, this doesn't just happen overnight that you guys split like that, but just the manner in which it happened, and you know, you both have been covering the league longer than I have, but like, I cannot remember an agent publicly splitting with a player in this manner and like releasing a 5-paragraph statement basically saying the player lacks self-awareness and I'm trying to advise him for what I think is best for his career and he wants something else. Like, I've never seen that before. So I think part of it was he wanted to kind of get out, you know, it was going to obviously come out that they were splitting, and I think he wanted to tell his side of the story first, because sometimes with these things, the first narrative is like, we still haven't heard from Russ. He liked a tweet that said this had nothing to do with the Lakers situation. You know, that's cap. And he liked that tweet. So clearly, like, he's saying it seems to be more of a personal thing, or at least not related to the Lakers situation. But, you know, Thad set the narrative, right? Like, he came out and he told his side of the story. And I also think I'm sure on both sides, like, there has to be some hard feelings here, because from everything I had heard through the years, like, they were two of the closer player agent, like, they had a very close player agent relationship.
Absolutely.
And the way Thad operated, as you said, like, very out of the spotlight, and not one of these guys that, you know, was really out there. You know, there are some agents that we know that are more in the spotlight and more, you know, sitting courtside or kind of they're playing the game a little bit pregame. Like, Thad was very behind the scenes. So I do think that, you know, and anytime there's a mutual parting of ways, I think it's more so one side than the other. It's never really 50% mutual. So I'm guessing, kind of reading the tea leaves here, like, it was more from Russ's side, obviously. I don't think, you know, I'm sure Thad would love to still represent him. But so I think he just wanted to tell his side of the story, set the narrative first. But it was pretty shocking. And I'm sure on some level he's hurt by the situation. And, you know, when you're upset, you might do stuff that's kind of out of character. But I don't know, because that was one thing. You know, some people were upset and they're like, he shouldn't have done that. And you know, he shouldn't have come out and said that. But at the same time, like, you know, I think they were so close that there was just some hard feelings there. And I think he wanted to clear the air.
And so, you know, does that indicate, as I think you inferred in the story, and I tend to agree with you, that if there's a Westbrook trade, it's not going to wind up with Westbrook being on that team, that he's going to be a free agent, for lack of a better term, very quickly after he's traded, wherever he's traded, if he's traded. And does that speak to Russ maybe not being aware of what he is and who he is and how he's viewed around the league right now?
100%. And that was something that was clear, I thought, you know, most in his exit interview. And I don't know if you guys saw the quotes or the video from that, but that was just, it was incredibly cringeworthy, because, you know, he was saying, on one hand, he's like, oh, you know, I didn't have the season I wanted. I take accountability. But then the entire press conference, he was throwing everybody else under the bus. I mean, he threw Frank Vogel. He threw the entire Lakers. He's like, I never felt welcome from day one here. And then he even threw LeBron and AD under the bus, where, you know, someone asked him, LeBron and AD both said multiple times throughout the season, let Russ be Russ. And we want Russ to be himself. We want to figure out what's the best way to incorporate his skill set into what we do. And he was like, come on, that wasn't true. Like, they never did that. So, like, he went at everybody, you know, he unloaded the clip in his exit interview. And I thought that, again, and like, the one thing he said about his performance was, he was like, well, I averaged a triple double last year. I didn't do that this year. So by that measure, like, I didn't have a good season. And it's like, if you're judging your performance solely off of averaging a triple double, you're completely missing the point. And from stuff I heard last season, like, during film sessions, he would, you know, push back on stuff that was very obvious of, like, hey, you missed this defensive rotation. He did not like being the center of attention in those film sessions, and stuff like that. So I think he's just at a point in his career, and I compared it to Allen Iverson, where you know, he's someone that, you know, played a specific style of basketball for 12, 13 years, very right. successfully at a very high level. But he is now at the stage of his career where he's lost his athleticism. Last year was one of the worst finishing seasons at the rim. I mean, that's always been Russ's strength, right? Like, super athletic, can get to the rim and can finish with the best of them. That was not the case last year. He really struggled. I mean, I think it was the LA Times that reported it, but like, he had his hand checked out last year because he was missing so many layups, and it was like the turnovers and just the ball handling stuff. Like, he had some legit issues with his shot, with his ball handling, with his finishing. And then defensively, his metrics were awful. I mean, there's so many different advanced metrics where he was in like the bottom five league-wide, not even at his position, but like league-wide. So all, like, yes, he put up 18-7-7. Yes, he played more than LeBron and AD, but he had a pretty bad season. You can make the case it was his worst or second worst season of his career. And I just don't think he is acknowledging that. And I think it's one thing to publicly not acknowledge it, but clearly behind the scenes, he's not really realizing, like, if anyone trades for you, it is because of your contract and them wanting to get off money and get an asset from the Lakers. It is not because they want you to be the face of the franchise. They want you to be the starting point guard. Like, any team that takes him on is facilitating, you know, clearing their cap sheet and helping the Lakers here. So I think he just has not come to terms with it. And it's unfortunate, but I think until he does, like, he's just going to kind of keep bouncing around the NBA.
This doesn't sound salvageable from your end. And we're seeing, right. We've seen Chris Haynes report that, you know, Bron, AD, and Russ, you know, met to try to, like, get together and, you know, see if they can make this happen. To me, this is the number one question before the Lakers can move
on
forward.
The phone, like, it's 1987.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, the one thing I want to add to that, though, which I don't think people are talking about enough, and I'm not knocking Chris at all, so I want to be clear with that. But he reported that was the first weekend of Summer League, which that Friday was the whole LeBron Russ non-interaction at Summer League.
Right.
So that call happens, but 5 days later or 5-6 days later, Russ fires his agent and his agent comes out and says, you know, basically implies Russ wants to be traded. So, like, basically, I know that call happened, but I don't know how fruitful the call actually was. Like, I don't know if it, like Chris reported it happened and it did happen and that was a good scoop. Right. But like, I don't think that solved everything.
It's not mutually exclusive that
exactly,
those two things
exactly.
could have happened.
My question is, if this is this is the number one issue on the Lakers. You can't move forward until you figure this out. This is a huge, like, lump in the throat of the Lakers, right? Especially considering you have a new coach, right? A brand new head coach, mm-hmm. and you need to get this thing started right. Like, how is this? Is there a path where this is at all salvageable with Russell Westbrook on the team?
Yes, but I think it would require Russ having self-awareness and changing his game in a way we've never seen before. So, like, in that hypothetical scenario, yes. And maybe the compromise is, like, bringing him off the bench and just saying, like, hey, Russ, you know, you do what you do, but it's going to be in a 24-minute bench role, you're our sixth man. I don't think he goes for that. I don't think, you know, again, like,
man, are you sure? It sounds,
I don't,
like,
think he does. right? So,
are you positive?
I just think, like, if we're keeping it real, like, the Lakers are a play-in team as currently constructed, and they might be, like, on the low end of the play-in. Like, they might be a 9 or 10 seed, I think, really, with looking at how deep the West is. You got the Clippers now healthy with Kawhi. You got Denver coming back with Jamal Murray and Michael Porter. And I like some, you know, adding KCP, Bruce Brown. You still got Phoenix kept Ayton. Golden State's the defending champs. Memphis, Dallas, Minnesota loaded up. New Orleans is getting Zion back. Like, the West is loaded. And if you compare any of those teams to the Lakers, like, yes, maybe the Lakers have the best 1-2 or right up there with anybody. But that third spot, that fourth spot, that fifth spot is worse than any of those other teams. Like, all those teams have better depth and better top end guys aside from the top two. So the Lakers, like the, I mean, I'm with you guys, like the Lakers, I wrote it and I stand by it. Like, I honestly think they might be just better off if they can't move Russ for Buddy Hield or for Kyrie, maybe you just send him home and do a John Wall in Houston. And like, because the version of Russ from last season, I think is a detrimental player on both sides of the ball. And that, like, if they have that guy again, I think they're a 9 or 10, you know, maybe an 8 seed, but like they're going to be bad. And you know, yes, you're losing some, you're clearly losing talent and some offensive production without him, but maybe that is a situation where like just not having that toxicity improves your team. And that's just, you know, I think that's how I view it. And I think that's how some people with the Lakers view it.
Well, two things. One is it possible? Possible. I'm not saying likely. Is it possible that Darvin Ham has a better, you know, will have a better chance of success in convincing Russ to change than Frank Vogel did? I mean, you just know going in, that's not going, Russ ain't going to fly with Frank Vogel. That's not going to work. He's not going to listen to him. You know, like Russ is going to do what Russ wants to do. Does D Ham have a better chance of maybe getting him to see a bigger picture than Frank Vogel would, than Frank Vogel did or could possibly do?
Definitely. Definitely. You know, I thought it was important that Russ was there at his intro press conference, and yeah. Darvin has done nothing but speak glowingly of Russ. And, you know, he told Mark Spears that he's going to, you know, he's got a starting spot for him. So that probably kills the possibility of him coming off the bench. But but at the same time, I think we go back to Thad's statement, and in the statement, he mentions, you know, I'm recommending him stay in LA and take, you know,
listen to D-Ham, basically, right?
Which if you're kind of reading the you know, subtext there, it's
Russell ain't
recommending
that.
Russ doesn't want to do that. Russ doesn't want to do that. And what, right. What Darvin Ham has been preaching is like almost like a Drew Holiday type role in Milwaukee, where he's like, we want Russ to be our point of attack guy, you know, on the ball, bulldog, like, you know, leading the defense, and then offensively kind of figuring out ways to play around LeBron and AD. And that's just not,
he's not going to screen
Russ
away.
Has never done that. Telling me? You know, like, you know, not since his early OKC days. The thing is too, like two important things. One, Russ promised LeBron and AD all the, like this conversation that they recently had, like they had multiple of those conversations last offseason. Like before they agreed to trade for Russ, they were having these conversations of like, how is it going to work? How is it going to fit? And Russ made certain promises to LeBron and AD that did not come to fruition. And then two, like all of the talk last training camp with the Lakers was, you know, Russ is going to be our defensive guy. Russ is going to play off the ball. Like we're going to use him in different ways. None of that happened. He had one game per second spectrum where he screened more than twice on the ball all season, and it was the third game of the season. So it's like Russ never changes game.
Man, you know, that's Russ early was always Russ, baby. So. He tried.
And then he threw up his hands and said, "Ah!"
And he saw the 1-2 start. He, you know, the 1-2 start, and he was like, "All right, I'm giving up.
I'm done."
You know, this is very, like, I mean, you brought up Iverson, and you know, I'm very emotional about Iverson. Like, Iverson's my guy, and I can imagine how people feel about Russ. But it feels like this all comes down to 30-something Euro players having to say, "Hey, man, like, this ain't 5 years ago." Like, no matter what it is, right? No matter if it's LeBron saying, "All right, I got to do something different," or Russ saying, "All right, I got to do something different." That just feels like such a tough sell. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like NBA players in 30s, they just don't change.
They're like, this is why I'm here, because
I
don't change. Like, right? You know what I mean?
If we had to pick a player who this was going to be like, wouldn't it be Russ? So I don't know why I'm so surprised by this, right? Like, well, I don't know why I'm shocked.
And DA,
he's going to the Hall of Fame because he suffered. Yes, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and DA saw it in Washington. Like, I think the thing is, like, Russ is still capable of, he can get you a 30-point triple-double. But
if you give him the ball and just live with it.
But then, you're a 45-win, you're a 45-win team that's going to lose in the first round. Like, we've seen since KD left, like, that's kind of been the thing is, like, you know, Russ can put up his numbers, but you're going to be a 6-8 seed that's going to lose in round one. And like, you know, yes, he'll look good. He'll be an all-star, all-NBA guy. But like Russ has, I mean, that even going back to the KD days, like Russ has kind of always struggled to fit into like winning basketball. And that was kind of the thing, you know, partially with him and KD. So, right. And then you saw in Houston, they had to go through drastic measures to trade away Clint Capella of like, we're going to make Russ our center offensively. Like Lakers can't do that. They have Anthony Davis. They have LeBron James. Like,
right.
You know, so I just think to me, there's clearly a limitation here. And for the Lakers, like if you got to trade both picks, I'm on board with just, you know, you only have Lakers, LeBron for another year or two.
Picks are irrelevant. Yeah.
Like, let's go all in
with that. I agree with that 1000%.
Let's go.
The part that's disappointing for me, here's the part that bothers me, because I feel like Russ is better than his current reputation. You know what I'm saying? I agree. This is difficult to watch see because
People aren't taking into consideration this, Marcus. Russ is stubborn and all of that. It's still hard to play with LeBron. And nobody will look at it from that point of view. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody acknowledges that no matter who you are, Anthony Davis can't play with LeBron the way he would play in New Orleans. It's hard. It's not bad. It's just hard. That's all.
That's what I'm saying. One of them got to change, but it's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
But the part that frustrates me about Russell Westbrook is because he clearly has the ability, but at some point you figured something was switched to make him say, I want to win a championship. And everybody who has made that switch and got that in their head, you know where they changed? On defense. They all said, you know what? I want to win a championship. Let me get after it on defense. Let me get after it like I never have before. I mean, and you know, I know it'll probably burn him up using this comparison, but you watch Steph fight on defense, and if you got that from Russell Westbrook, your team changes dramatically. Like you said, I mean, the Drew Holiday, obviously he's not Drew Holiday, but it's the fight on defense where it's like, man, if you just do that part, like you can do that part, like physically you can do it. And also like it will change the entire dynamic of your role. And for you, people will look at you differently if you lock in on defense. The fact that that switch hasn't flipped is the disappointing part for me, because I do feel like Russ is way better than his reputation. Like what you just said about Russ, I'm like, come on, man. It's all true. It's all true. This is a terrible season. But it hurts you. It hurts, man. Like, well, this is Russ.
Right. That's Russell Westbrook.
And really, like, that's why, I mean, to begin with, like, the Lakers just shouldn't have made this trade. And it never made sense. And, you know, like, I think, you know, we have been talking about it more from the Lakers' perspective, but from Russ's perspective, like, he just was never going to fit around LeBron anyway. So, like, you're setting him up for failure by asking him to do things that he's never really done and partially isn't capable of doing. Like, he's not a good shooter. Like, you know, we have a sample size of 14 years of he's not a good shooter. And when you play with LeBron, there is a certain level of off-ball play that, you know, off-ball activity that you just have to put up with.
And Russ,
as a non-shooter, just, you know, messes up the spacing. So like that, you know, the fit was never there to begin with. And that's why this trade never made, you know, I said it from day one, the trade never made sense. I think it played out worse than any of us expected. Like, the Lakers were still the West favorites last year, even with the trade. I think it's also Russ was kind of set up to fail with the way that this team is constructed.
Yeah. Me and Marcus talked about this on the show last week, and I still have yet to see anybody write this. Like, yeah, the Lakers, they got younger. No doubt. They got Troy Brown and they got Lonnie Walker and they got JTA. They drafted Max Christie. None of those dudes can shoot.
Oh no!
None of those dudes can shoot.
I said after like my free agency recap, I was like, this might be the worst shooting team in the NBA. Like,
it's crazy. Like,
LeBron was the only, like, even taking Max Christie's college percentage in, LeBron
right.
was the
32% on yeah. threes. You know what I mean?
LeBron was the only guy last season that shot above league average. League average last year on threes was 35.4%. Troy Brown was yeah. right at 35.4. So a league average shooter. But LeBron was the one, like, if LeBron's the best guy, shooter on your roster, right. that's a problem.
Right.
You know, and, yes. and we've seen in Miami, in Cleveland, like even in LA, that the one year they won the title, like LeBron succeeds with a spaced floor of multiple guys yes. who can shoot 36 to 40%.
Forget Lakers LeBron. We're watching the basket. We're watching basketball teams. We're literally watching teams win, and all of the good teams have shooting. Like
and multiple shooting. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Just watch my. Well,
I wrote early in the summer too. Like if you go back through, I think it was the first post Dallas. So really, that first Miami season that they won the title. There's been this shift with the 3-point shooting where every team that has won the championship has been top 10 in attempts and percentage. The one exception, there's two exceptions. One was the San Antonio team, but they shot much better in the playoffs. Remember, they had that dominant postseason
yeah,
run.
Yeah, yeah.
And then yes. the other exception yes. was the Lakers with LeBron and AD. But those two, I mean, AD was just at such a high, I mean, they might've been the two best players in the league that season in the postseason.
His jumper
so like,
was wet all postseason.
It was crazy. So like,
right.
we have a sample size now of a decade of you need elite 3-point shooting to win in the postseason. And the Lakers don't have that. So again, like maybe they're a 6 seed, maybe they're a 7 seed that they sneak in, they upset someone. You know, I don't know. They get Minnesota or whoever in round one, they upset them. But like, they're not a contender with this current roster.
I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand. You just saw it happen last year that they could not shoot, and it destroyed LeBron's effectiveness. So given a second chance, why would you? Now, Thomas Bryant's a good shooter for a big man. You know what I mean? But
it, yeah, he's, it's,
you had to put
he's
that
not
qualifier
a high-volume shooter. You know what I mean? Like, I don't... I don't understand how they make these moves and say we're better. Like, but you're not better because you still the floor is still
the one thing I'll say is
1982 in the paint in LA.
A running joke on Lakers Twitter is how many guys from last season's team aren't currently signed, and if you go through the list, it's like Avery Bradley, Melo, Dwight, Kent Bazemore, Wayne Ellington, Trevor Ariza. So like, there are a lot of guys from last year's roster, and most of those guys started at some point, even double digit games. So like, I think in that sense, like they have able bodies, so that they don't have like the 35-year-olds who can barely move. So I think in that sense, they have actual guys who can play defense, get out in transition. Like they're better in that sense. But if I'm playing the Lakers, I'm packing the paint, and it's just like okay, let whoever you want shoot as many threes as they want, but like, LeBron, AD, you guys aren't going downhill. You're not getting to the rim. And that's what teams did last year. And they just missed open three after open three.
You know what it feels like the Lakers could really use? And this would be great for you, by the way. Second year on the beat, flying solo. They need somebody who they didn't expect to turn into a star. They need a Jordan Poole out of nowhere. Like, okay, we got a piece now. Who's the best chance for that? Right? Is it Austin Reeves? Talen? Is Kendrick Nunn gonna come back here and show us what they were missing last year? You know what I'm saying? Like, who do you think is the best chance to just not? I'm not saying become an all star, but a player who just plays above expectation to give them something else.
I think the three guys I'd look at are Austin, Talen, and Lonnie Walker. I think. I wrote it like I think Lonnie might have been the worst taxpayer mid-level signing. If you just look like he shot, I mean, we're talking about shooting. He shot 31% last year on threes, and he was up to like, I think 37% post All-Star break. But again, another guy who like he's supposed to kind of be the Malik Monk on this team, but Malik shot 40% the year before coming to the Lakers and shot almost 40% last year again. So
I mean, he shot 38 last year, like which is fine, right?
Malik was really good. That was the Lakers' best offseason signing. But I think Lonnie has some untapped potential. He's a guy who, very athletic, that does kind of have some similarity with Malik. So that's one guy I would look at. But I know Austin, I recently wrote, he's bulked up, gained about 10, 12 pounds this offseason. really working on his three-point shot. At one point in college, it was a top three shooter in the country. So you got to think that he's not going to shoot 31, 32%.
31 again. Looks crazy for him, by the way. Like, yeah, you just like, watch him shoot, he doesn't look like a 31% shooter.
And he started, he had a really rough, I think he started, he also was like 37, 38% through January and then had a two-month stretch there where he was 27% and just couldn't make anything. So he said he hit the rookie wall. I mean, he was a guy who was 197 at 6'5", so pretty thin. He's gained some weight, gained some muscle. So I think he's another guy. And then Talen is still only 21, going to be 22 at the beginning of the season. Like, Lakers put a lot of money in him. You know, they invested a lot. And we've seen it in flashes. We've seen, especially in the preseason, he looks like an all-star in the preseason. But he's a guy that has to get better defensively, has to be more consistent on that end. And then also his shot. I mean, he might be the worst shooter of all the perimeter guys, even throwing Russ in there. So, like, if he can get that to at least close to league average, he's someone who could be a rotation guy. But yeah, I mean, they need someone to pop, and they might even need a couple, because again, this roster is better, but they won 33 games last year, so there's a long way to go
in a down West conference. Yeah. In a Western conference that was down last year, you know. And let's to Marcus's point though, is it possible? Let's look at it a different way. Is it possible that they could play a style, because they do have length. Mm-hmm. I'll give them that. They're longer.
Yeah.
Is it possible that they could be kind of a switchy junk defense, try to turn you over, get out and score in transition, as opposed to trying to slug it out in the half court? Is that possible with the group they've got?
I think so. You know, from what I've heard, Darvin is implementing a lot of what Milwaukee did, and Milwaukee was a bit more of a conservative defense and kind of, we're going to funnel you to the paint where we have
drop coverage. Yeah,
drop. Yeah. And you know, we got Brooke Lopez and Giannis back there. So you can envision it. It does sound like they're probably going to start with most likely Thomas Bryant and AD. And then that's giving you a couple guys, 6'10", 6'11", 7 feet, and kind of recreate that 2019-20 blueprint that they had. So I think they're going to try to do some of those things, but again, you kind of look at the roster and you're like, I guess Troy Brown's another one where I think he has some of the characteristics of a 3-and-D guy. He has shot the ball around league average. Defensively, he's got the tools, but like, we haven't seen it consistently. He's been in smaller roles, you know, in Chicago, yeah, coming out of Washington. So you had a firsthand look at him, but like, he's someone that maybe, you know, is still 22. Like, I think he's right, got some potential. But yeah, I mean, like, JTA is going to go from like the 12th dude on the Warriors to like maybe being the Lakers like third big, like, you know, like they're just in a weird spot right now. So they're asking, like, whatever we see from next year's team, it's a lot of guys that like have played smaller roles that are going to be thrust into bigger roles. And that could go one of two ways, right? Like, someone could show you something that they've never shown before, or some of these guys could be a little out of their comfort zone and playing 25 minutes when they've always been like a 12 minute a night guy. So I guess to get back to the defense, like, I think there's potential there. I wouldn't be surprised if they're better defensively than offensively, to be honest, with some of the limitations they have offensively currently.
Right.
Is this LeBron's last year in LA?
I'm going to say no, but I think it really depends on Russ and the season that they have. I think if they keep Russ, and because look, like, the Lakers can say whatever they want publicly, behind the scenes they want to trade Russ. If they could keep their
man, LeBron just said he felt like he was by himself out there. He wished he played golf. Like,
and like, yeah. So like, they want to flip Russ, and if they stand, and you know, a big haggling thing is, you know, haggle point is, how many picks do we give up? Do we give up one pick? Do we give up two picks? How valuable are our picks? I think if they stand pat and basically punt on this season, because again, as we're saying here, like, this is a play-in team as currently constructed, and that's not going to fly with LeBron. I could see him potentially leaving next offseason, but my expectation is they're going to flip Russ at some point. And you know, assuming they get Kyrie or Buddy Hield or a decent package back for him, I think that's probably enough to satisfy LeBron and keep him in LA. But I really think it's going to come down to what do they do with Russ and what type of season do they end up having? And if they keep Russ and they have another 30-something win season or even low 40s, like, I think that opens the door to LeBron potentially leaving.
Okay, but serious question. Where would LeBron go?
That's the question. Cleveland?
Golden State.
Golden State. For the taxpayer MLE.
You get what I'm saying?
Come on, man. I mean, I'll never say never, but Cleveland, look, I don't think Cleveland's like, you know what? We're good.
Yeah, I have to pull up their cap sheet, but
Garland and all our guys.
Him, Mobley, Garland, and Allen would be quite the quartet.
I know, but, you know.
What about the place he already been to?
Well, Miami. I was going to say, but he and Riles napalmed one another.
So did he and
Dan Gilbert. Yes. That's true. I suppose. I don't think it's as cut and dried as we think it might be, to your point, like it would have been 5 years ago.
I mean, there are more teams with cap space. Like next offseason is a big, cap space summer.
Plus, if he says you have to bring Bronny in here in 3 years or whenever Bronny's eligible.
You know who do that in a heartbeat? Especially if he takes the mid-level? New York Knicks. Yeah.
That's not a bad call.
Yeah, I think to be clear, I think he's still he's going to stay, but I do think if they have a repeat of last season or something similar, that is where that opens that door of just, I don't know if I can win another championship here.
I don't want any of you guys to worry, because I can assure you, after being on Instagram this morning, that help is on the way. We've already seen it. It's happening. I'm going to break this news right now. You're going to write the story, but I'm going to break it. Dennis is coming back. He already asked LeBron. He just got through begging LeBron on Instagram. The help you need right there, man. That's all I'm saying.
But honestly, I mean, like, I think that's where they pivot. If the Russ situation isn't resolved, like, maybe you send him home and you sign Dennis or you sign whoever the top point guard is and say, like, we're rolling with Kendrick and Dennis. And again, on paper, I think it's a step back, but I think there's a chance that the spirit of the team is better than it was last season.
Is a buyout off the table? If you just go,
yeah, just because the Lakers are mom and pop shop and they're not going to do that.
They're not going to cash out, yeah.
You know what, you say that, and I know what you're saying. They got $3 billion in local TV money. It's impossible that they're a mom and pop organization. They may not have a lot of people in their organization.
Well,
but
I mean,
they can't possibly be cash poor at this stage.
They don't got that Chase Center money.
Nobody has Chase Center
money. Nobody's doing it. Give it to him again. Marcus, give it to me again, because I couldn't believe what you said.
$800 million revenue.
Jeez.
That's crazy. That's
$800 million. That's unbelievable.
Who's number two? Oh my God. Like, what's the gap between one? Do you know the gap between one and two?
I think four is two.
Yeah, it's got to be several hundred million dollars, because I got to think the Lakers are number two, aren't they?
Probably.
Yeah. You know?
Well, who had? I think Boston might have had a big run.
Boston. Throwing the Knicks are always up there, and Chicago's always up there, but still, it's got to be several hundred million dollars. That's crazy. God. Jovan, thank you, man. Thank you for jumping in, man. Appreciate it. Love to talk. Listen to him on his podcast. It's a great listen for the new NBA. Read him in The Athletic. Killing it on the Lakers beat, man.
Hey, man, can I get on Stargazing? You feel me?
You don't know what I'm saying?
I'll bring you on.
You know what I'm saying? I got a story to tell.
Marcus has
I got a story.
Marcus has some things.
You know what I'm saying? I ain't in LA, but I've been there.
You know what I'm saying? Leave that 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get this fine American podcast. Now, look, Marcus. These fools about to go on vacation can't leave 5 stars. What do they need to do?
Keep it to yourself, you haters. We're going to talk about you like they talk about Russ. Like they talk about Dennis. Come back. Run it back, question mark.
Knocked up 100 million.
I'll be talking. keep it to yourself, you haters.